Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Pulse Podcast Season 2, where we talk to digital health leaders, experts, entrepreneurs, and enthusiasts of the world. Super excited to dive into conversation with our guest today, Liam Cahill. I'm joined today by my partner and colleague and co-host for this episode, Dr. Sassine. Always a pleasure to have you on. Just before we start the conversation, a quick reminder to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow our LinkedIn page for more updates. Liam, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
So before, you know, we dive deeper into conversation, we always like to sort of get to know our guests a little bit better. Can you please introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background. You are a founder of Together Digital. Please tell us more about that as well.
Yeah, so I run a company called Together Digital. I spend almost no time talking about it, which is really problematic because I suppose I spend my time talking about the things that I'm most excited about. And Together Digital is a pirate ship vessel, I like to describe it as, where I bring together people to take on interesting projects. By introduction, I work with organizations, leaders, national bodies, frontline services to help think about how we can change our mindset and paradigm around digital, how we can effectively use digital to change how we think about changing a healthcare service, about all these different kind of things. And rather than thinking specifically around technology, my background is a technologist, so I've got a degree in computer science, but I'm very much down the road of thinking about how we can make our environment and our organizations fit for digital and respond to this age that we're going into now. I'll also say I have advised around about 2021 organizations around working with the NHS, and I spend a lot of time geeking out on different elements on the National Health Service on various socials. Finally, my background was I co-built an NHS initiative around medicines and prescribing and changing pathways in the 2010s, which we spun out to be a social enterprise which scaled to support the whole NHS, national bodies, using digital to bring together a community that had never really been together before. And that's kind of, I suppose, where a lot of my rebel ideas came from into this phase of my life now. So lots of thumbs, lots of pies, very excited and geeky on lots of different things.
Thank you so much, Liam, and we're so excited to have you here. And so we'll start with the conversation. So since you're in that space, and I would want to ask you, what does digital mean for individuals and communities, especially in the healthcare landscape?
So I'm going to take inspiration. So at the time of recording, obviously last night was the Oscars, and I don't know if you caught it, but Hugh Grant basically like answered questions without answering any questions. So I'm going to try and not do that. But actually, it's a question that I think about quite a lot because, you know, digital is going to play a huge role in society. We know that the digital technologies are here, and they are going to, you know, sort of move into every corner and crevice of our lives. But I think often we talk about the role that digital will have almost like it's a foregone conclusion or like it's a set thing. And I suppose for me, I've been spending a lot of time sort of getting back into systems thinking and teaching it to health organizations and thinking about it. And like, according to Donella Meadows, like the most powerful thing that we can change is our paradigm. And actually, there's a really fantastic quote by a gentleman called Ralph Waldo Emerson, who says, "We instantly surround ourselves with the material apparatus which exactly corresponds to our state of thought." And so actually, if we take this and we think, all right, well, what is digital technology for our future? I think a lot of the conversation is it's going to come, it's going to be X, Y, and Z. But actually, in my day-to-day practice in organizations, I suppose in the thinking I do, we have a choice. And actually, the future of what technology will be to our society is how we feel and how we think and our values and our mindsets that change that material apparatus. And for me, I feel very passionately that in the future, like there's two very big extremes we can see. One, I suppose, is a form of enlightenment. We help to raise everybody up. We give people the tools to be able to have more independent communities, to have empowered clinicians and services, you know, to have a public sector that is about raising the individual, not about repressing the individual. Or we can have technologized autocracy, which is, I suppose, dare I say, the model that's starting to play out in China at the moment, you know. And I feel the immediate day-to-day decisions we have right now at this moment in time will help to define what the answer to that question is. So I don't really feel qualified to answer the question, just to say it's a choice, and there's some big choices that we have to make in order to see where that will go for society.
So, go ahead. That was very interesting. And do you think it's a choice, Liam? Because I think the way we're moving towards and the way technology is really shaping and bringing this paradigm shift that you're talking about, do you still think it's a choice for future doctors to say, oh, I don't want to use technology in mainstream clinical settings? Or
no, I think the use of technology is an inevitability. But there is, I suppose, if we think about application in the healthcare system, I think there is one where we build stuff in absence of clinicians. It's not about empowering them to do their best roles, and that the future slightly sort of top-down view of society in a healthcare perspective is that we just replace it and we've got some sort of, you know, automated sort of technologically augmented system that, you know, sort of gives people digital advice. On the other hand, what we could have clinicians who could really work with people around other different things in their lives, who could be part of it and could be totally dovetailing with these technologies and be able to use that. Like, to be honest, I think the whole model of healthcare is going to change. And I think what we're moving to a certain degree is community. And so actually, if we could imagine take the existing role of a doctor and imagine what that's going to look like in a period of time, I think there's a lot of choices on how that will look. No, you know, like the Luddites in the last industrial revolution, like steam engines came, they did their thing, there was no other choice. We've got the same kind of thing. It is coming because we need it to economically. The necessities are here, right? Our public sector institutions are on their knees, and you know, we have a clear imperative. But what emerges out of it and how we construct it, to me, is just as much philosophical as technological.
No, and you know, I think your passion really shines through, and I hope that we do.
Me too much sometimes.
If you were referencing to the Oscars, I hope we do a better job than Ashley at asking questions, and they're not as generic as hers were. And I'm glad that you mentioned the public institutions. And so when we talk about public and community health and social care, you know, it is one of the most underrepresented sectors when it comes to health tech investment, adoption, implementation. And so, but when we see other industries, leveraging technology to sort of improve their, you know, end-to-end customer journey and just the way that they run the business now, we're all like, why can't we do this in healthcare? And even though healthcare has its unique landscape, it has a lot of red tape, its unique challenges. And I was actually reading one of your LinkedIn articles in which you explain why health tech needs to better understand community healthcare services. Mm. So in your experience, how can technology redefine social care?
I've been having a lot of conversations recently about, you know, health and social care and kind of as this, I'm doing a lot of this today. I don't know why, but like as it sort of comes into social care, like ideally, let's break down that definition of health and social care because it's people's lives. Last year, I was involved in a really interesting, exciting piece of work with the Health Foundation, trying to help them work through their first tech program, which they've started putting out as they prepare to deliver it in the coming months in the UK. And the more that we get into what good care looks like, the more that we have to stop thinking in the silos of health and social care. And I think my role in the past working with community was a real eye-opener. So I advised national bodies around digitization of community health services that kind of, you know, what comes through from GP care. And it tends to be long-term conditions, people just living their lives out in community. And a lot of that is really, really close to social care. But actually the boundaries that sit between them are the things that create the cracks that people fall between. And I suppose, I don't know, like I'm sure all three of us have seen like Eric Topol's convergence of medicines, like given all of Tazine's things that she puts out on this, I'd imagine she's probably got it stuck onto a wall or something. But actually, when you think about the convergence of, you know, health history, biopsychosocial data, all of the, you know, the different elements, family structure, sort of psychological needs and so on, where they live, all of this different stuff. I suppose technologically, there is an argument to say that this is a health and social care aggregating machine, that it sort of puts them all in together because you need to. And I think, I don't know, like in terms of social care, if we apply technology to social care alone, I think we're really going to struggle. But if we apply technology to reimagining how we can bring together these areas that we had to take apart because they were too difficult to manage, there's some really exciting things that can emerge from those. And I think actually just from that Health Foundation work, like, you know, what drives a better health outcome? You know, relational care concepts, the kind of things, you know, around that. Like these are things that we can bake in that can make health and so that can make health and social care a much better experience. It can give people choice and empowerment. But again, goes back to my first point again, that it's like, if we just keep thinking about top down, then that's what the future of technology and social care looks like.
True.
Excuse
my voice. I'm just recovering from a bad throat infection. Mm-hmm. But I completely agree, and I post about it a lot as well, Liam, is that the shift is inevitable. How we do it is the question now. And I think you as mentors and other people as leaders who are actually advising organizations, advising clinicians how to use that shift to empower patients and to empower future doctors, so we all together can have communities which have better health outcomes. Because in the end, I think we all are moving towards the same goal.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, the technology development is mainly done by people who don't really understand healthcare. And I think that's what I've seen. And that's why I think we have this sort of narrative that clinicians aren't ready, the health systems aren't ready. But I think they are. It's how we approach a situation.
Yeah. Like, they're not going to be ready if we don't help them be ready. I always say to organizations, because, you know, I spend a lot of time in battlegrounds and organizations where you've got like the subject experts who know their particular areas, including IT a lot of the time. And there seems to be this mindset that technology is more confusing than the context of a really complex service with multidisciplinary teams and patients. And I think, you know, we seem to think, well, we need to do this for them because they're not going to understand it. And actually, the experiments that I run with organizations have, to me, proven the exact opposite. That it's easier if we try and help them, you know, the give a person a fish approach, to understand that technology isn't hard, but if we continue to make it really bloody hard, then it will be hard. And I don't know, can I give you my favorite story from working with a health service? And it tells me absolutely everything about why we need to involve, you know, clinical services, right? I was working with an organization, and it's not necessarily the most exciting one, but we were trying to ask some big questions about where the value of Microsoft 365 was in terms of sort of patient-facing services. And I think Microsoft 365 is really interesting because it gives you a load of creation tools that aren't like all this like really expensive hardcore stuff. You just got like a bucket of tools. And, you know, I was working with a neurodisability service who has some of the most complex patients we can think of in terms of their communication, in terms of the conditions they have, in terms of all of the different life circumstances. And, you know, we were working with a service to think about what we were trying to, you know, what we were trying to do. And one of them was just about helping use videos, have a video that they can put to somewhere. I was not being prescriptive. It was all about trying to help them to take their own journey. And I came back after a month, I think it was maybe the holidays, and the service lead came to me and said, guess what I've done? I was like, well, tell me, really excited about this. And she said, well, I've got this really complex patient who's just moved from hit the age of 18 and moved from a care environment, you know, for younger people into a general care home facility. She said, the problem is he's not very good at communicating, but he's got his iPad. And so he's got all, you know, turnover of staff all the time. And, you know, his empowerment, his agency is being affected because he can't communicate what his needs are and how he's moving and handling needs to be done. So actually what our physios did, and the service lead was a physio by training, she said, well, actually what we did is we went in, we recorded ourselves doing it with him, and we've got it, and he's got it on his iPad. We sent it securely to him. He's got it. He's in it. We've got the right consent forms and stuff like that, etc. But now when a carer comes in who's new or doesn't know, he shows them the video about how he'd like to be cared for. And to me, the thing about that for me that was really powerful was no IT team would have ever solved that problem or even seen that it existed. It would have been the big stuff. And I think we need a million of those moments in the context of care. And I think that's why we need to really shift this balance to say that the context is just as, if not more important than the technology. Absolutely. Sorry, I'm just total sort of like pedestal there.
And sometimes the answers are very simple.
Yeah. It doesn't have to
and
be
just
too
takes a small change, you know, absolutely. And this is something that we're so passionate about. And it's actually the precedent of why we started what we started, because we are on a mission to implement clinician guided processes, especially in health tech. I think that it's just such an important missing piece of the puzzle. And I'm so glad that you shared the story with us. Communication seems to be a huge challenge. Huge. And in a rapidly evolving sort of landscape, you know, the challenges become more complex. And they are evolving too. And so we need, you know, healthcare professionals on board. We need allies on board to facilitate a more holistic sort of care delivery model in which all the stakeholders of the healthcare ecosystem are involved, right? But having said that, besides communication, in your experience, because you work with organizations, what are some other challenges that you've encountered?
Where do we start? So functionally there's huge amounts of challenges, right? We're getting sprawl around technology. There's too many things in different places. It's not straightforward. But to be honest, at the moment, if we just look at not just the UK, but modern health systems at the moment, they're buckling under the weight of a series of things that have happened in most of the areas, you know, financial crash, cost-saving initiatives, system with no fat on it, huge pandemic, lots of waiting times, lack of capacity, and growing demand in all of these different systems. And for many of these organizations, it tends to be about a numbers game and being able to do more with less available people. We don't have enough workforce. And so, you know, like realistically, it's an equations game in my mind that most of the problems that we tend to see happen tend to be about finding ways and tools and problems to solve in order to find different ways to save times. And to be honest, like, I would say that this is actually probably falls under communication in my view as well, but like the synchronicity of everything, right? So every time someone has a problem, we have to have a person in a place spending that time. And like, I work with a health visiting service, for example, and I asked a health visitor, like, how many times do you repeat the same thing to a patient? You know, how many times do you do this? And then school nursing service too. And like, there's a lot of repeatables in care that we do, that we can think about changing how we do that. And so, but we've got to be able to think about the saving of time in terms of technology, because realistically at the moment, it's about hours, it's about cost, it's about savings. And actually with buckling systems, like this is a huge challenge where individually in individual services across the board, whether it's a child service or whether it's an acute service around ear, nose and throat, whatever it might be, we need to be able to say what are the time opportunities and time pressures that we need to go to the most, and then be able to see what we can do about that. And I think the next revolution is going to come, if it comes, because this is public sector, right? You know, it's like, but when it eventually comes, is an asynchronous revolution. And actually that's going to bring in automation. That's going to start to get us to think about AI and, you know, because digital hasn't even begun to, you know, I know we talk like digital's here, you know, not us, but like, you know, a lot of people talk like digital, you know, because we've managed to do a virtual consultation and done a remote ward. This is only the beginning, right? And I think there's so much to be done within this, really. But it always comes back to the equation for me, you know, the E equals MC squared on demand and supply.
But actually what you've described here is a challenge and an opportunity for digital health. So I guess, but again, because the health systems have so many challenges right now, it looks like taking on digital systems is another enormous challenge. But I guess if we stop looking at it as a challenge, but as an opportunity to improve or reduce our challenges, that's what I think sometimes we look at, oh, but digital is separate, right? We all talk to our GPs on the phone now, right? We took video consultations during COVID. We don't think that's digital technology. We don't think that's digital health, but we think the rest is. But actually, digital, as you said, it is here. Yes, we're just starting. But I guess it's the right time for the challenge, especially in the public sector, because we don't have resources. We don't have. Yeah, it is an opportunity and a challenge, both, I would say. I've been working in different regions. I find that challenges are so different across communities and different countries that no solution is like plug and play or fits all scenarios.
Well, I think for me, like if we take virtualization, like you described, right? Virtualization is a really good area where we kind of think we've done it, but we haven't even begun to do it, right? So like right now, you know, patient and doctor, clinician, sort of is there. Now, all we're doing is we're taking this representation of us and we're putting it into a load of ones and zeros and we're providing the exact same representation. We're not doing anything with the data. But what this thing in the background is happening, which is so exciting, is it's turning into this stream of data that can be used for all kinds of different things. And on my teaching courses, actually, which is for like nurses, it's for loads of different people across different parts of the organization. I've got this session around virtualization where I show, for example, Microsoft's sort of AI feed-in that can be able to like do rankings on how the person's feeling and that could maybe flag up if they're looking depressed or they don't understand or concerned. And then just like live language translation for people who are using a service, right? We're not like, you know, like clinical translation is something that needs a bit more time because until we can say Ventolin and Van Halen doesn't come up, then we've got a little bit of work to do in terms of the technologies. But like, in that session where I kind of show people, I've got one, for example, where, you know, like I've got a little parrot, like an AI parrot sitting on my shoulder, kind of like, you know, squawking away. And people saying, oh, my child services would love this. It'd be a really good way to make clinicians look more friendly and stuff. And it's like, we haven't even begun to scratch what that stream of ones and zeros can do for us. So if we think that this is it, woo, we've got some surprises coming in the system, no, right? Absolutely. And so, yeah, totally. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we're almost at time. And I loved having you on our podcast. Your energy is contagious, to say the least. And but, you know, something that we ask our guests, all of our guests before wrapping up is where do you see healthcare in 10 years?
I'm not going to say it's a choice because that'd be a total cop out based on the first answer. I think this comes to where we see society, right? Let's be entirely honest. If we carry on our current path, I think we're going to see the death of public, like, you know, particularly in the NHS. And I know obviously you guys look at lots of different countries. But like, I think we're going to see a huge challenge to the existence of the healthcare models as we know it. Like, you know, the demand is growing. There's no extra money. And I think this is potentially going to lead us into a radical territory where we start having to think very different about what services are. To me, I think this is potentially, providing it doesn't get too bad before it gets better, this is a really exciting time because, you know, well, it could be. We could be that effectively everybody gets a budget, technologized version of care and, you know, that we stop seeing individuals because the individuals are off there doing their specialisms and that's it. But actually, as community, like, you know, this whole concept of integration and place-based care and getting into people's homes is hugely exciting. And actually, I think if we can start re-engaging members of society,
true,
to stop thinking about everything being paid for, you pay your taxes, the system gives you everything back, and then you get your healthcare service and it's all included. It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet of care, right? If we get away from that mentality, which is failing us right now, and start thinking about community assets and people playing a role.
True.
In 10 years, that could be super exciting. It could start seeing people building connections that we've slowly broken down over decades and decades. So will that happen in 10 years? I think we might be dealing with a broken system, or we might have something problematic emerging for it, or we might have something that's actually quite exciting emerging from it. Remains to be seen, really.
Any thoughts on that, Dr. Tazeen?
No, I think he explained it beautifully. Thank you so much, Ian, for coming.
Thank you. It's been lovely to be here.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Until next time.